All right, everybody, welcome back to the Dylan Gemelli podcast. So I have been really looking forward to this podcast. You're going to tell very quickly as to why, and I'm going to do my best here. I literally just got done telling my wife that you have so many titles after your name that I can't memorize all of these.
Don't say them all.
I took notes and have them up here so I could do it. Everybody, this Dr. Elizabeth Yerth. Welcome.
Thank you, Dylan. Thank you for having me.
Yes, yes, yes. She's an MD, and we can get into some of the other certifications, but I know that you're a double board certified physician, and that's physical medicine and rehabilitation and anti-aging regenerative medicine. So the credentials are endless, and I am just so excited to get all of the information I possibly can out of you to everybody and for my own benefit selfishly. So
we were so lucky to have a chance to work together at Olympia recently. Yeah. And so Dylan and I got to kind of know each other a little bit better, being on some panels together at Olympia, and we both became very rapidly fond of each other. So I'm honored to be here with you today.
Thank you so much. You know, I had a meeting with Don at Stem Regen, and I hadn't actually met him yet. And the first thing he told me literally was, well, I did some research on you and I respected you immediately because Dr. Yerth was following you. I swear to you. I was like, okay, all right. Cool. So just real quick, everybody, as she said, I met her last year, not this Olympia, last year, just very briefly. And then I had the honor of actually getting to sit next to her and speak, which may have been a little out of my league, but we started talking immediately, and I'm just so grateful and thankful for everything that you do and all of your teaching. So I am going to exploit you a little bit today and get as much info as I can.
Great, let's go for it.
All right. So one of the things that you talked about that I literally had no clue about that caught me off guard at the Olympia was this new form of oral testosterone. And, you know, being where I kind of come from, Andreol and everything on the forums was people were talking about that. And I was always like, it's not so great. And so I'm intrigued. Tell us about this new form of oral testosterone and some of the facts behind it and where you kind of see it going in the future.
Yeah. So, you know, you and I come from that same school where no, oral testosterone is bad, right? Because it's toxic to the liver. So you get liver damage. And so we always taught everybody to stay away from it. And so when this came out, which was pretty recently, by a company called Marius Pharmaceuticals, it was a little surprising. We're all like, okay, you can't do oral testosterone. But what they did is they devised an oral testosterone that was not processed by the liver. So it actually goes through the gut. It gets absorbed directly through the lymphatic system in the gut, bypasses any type of liver metabolism. So there's zero toxicity to the liver. And so it's extremely safe. No change in liver functions. They followed people for quite some time. They went through a large safety profile on it. You know, so it's an FDA-approved drug and zero liver toxicity, no changes in liver metabolism. So they decided not to kind of go the traditional pharmaceutical route. So what they did is they're working primarily with compounding pharmaceutical companies, and they're selling it to the compounding pharmaceuticals. Because if you look at where most of us who are doing hormonal medicine and what you recommend to a lot of your clients, we're working with compounding pharmacies a lot, right? Mm-hmm. And so their feeling was that was going to be a better place to educate people was through the compounding pharmacies. And so they will sell it to the compounding pharmacies. The compounding pharmacies will then sell it to the physicians. Oh. So a little bit different. You can't just go to your regular pharmacy and get this drug. Mm-hmm. It has to go through a physician that knows about it, knows working with compounding pharmacies, which on the downside is probably going to be most of your doctors who are traditional medicine doctors are not going to know about this drug and not going to utilize this drug. But if you really look at how many traditional medicine doctors are even doing much hormone replacement, even though they should be, it is very few. Okay. So yeah, maybe if you're completely bottomed out to zero on testosterone, they might treat you. But for the most part, they're not the doctors who are doing a lot of this. So this is a really nice new addition. Because a lot of guys, and there's nothing wrong with injections of testosterone, right? It works very well, you know, and you can do it twice a week, once a week dosing, twice a week dosing, or even, you know, small super physio or small sort of smaller dosing, even more frequently than that. So there's a lot of ways you can do testosterone, but a lot of guys don't like doing injections. So this is another option. A while ago, nasal spray testosterone came out as well. It was kind of a cool option too, except that nobody liked it. When you did it, it would drip out of your nose. It burned a lot. So it kind of rapidly fell out of favor. But this is really well tolerated by people. It has a couple of advantages over using injectable testosterone. And so number one, when we do injectable testosterone, if you're a younger guy, you have to protect testicular function, right? Because you're going to reduce your own production of testosterone and potentially reduce spermatogenesis and your own LH and FSH drop. So you're going to actually get atrophy of the testicles and all the things that go along with that. So this does not do that. So very interestingly, when you do small dosing orally, it does not have the same detrimental effects on testicular function. So we're not seeing guys have to adjunct it with things like enclomiphene or HCG who are trying to preserve fertility. And it also, because you're dosing it twice a day, it has very, very nice physiologic curves to what your normal testosterone surges are. Kind of surge up in the morning, they surge up in the evening. So basically, you can keep this very nice physiologic dosing, and guys seem to really like it. So what I've seen in my men who have been put on it is that I've switched over from injectable to this, is that they're actually reporting a little bit better sex drive and erection quality and muscle building. So I think there may be something to that more physiologic dosing that is actually going to be beneficial as well. One of the downsides, downside is cost. It's certainly more expensive than doing a sub-Q or intramuscular injection of testosterone. Even if you're dosing testosterone high, this is going to be a more expensive option for you. You know, with time, will it come down in price? Maybe. But, you know, it ends up being really probably about $100 a month. So definitely more expensive than traditional testosterone, but not out of reach for a lot of people. And, you know, I certainly have a lot of guys who have really found it just better, simpler, and they're happier with the outcomes.
I would pay $100 a month and not have to inject anymore.
I think there's a lot of guys who will, especially if you're like you know, younger guys, you know, as you get older, maybe the preservation of testicular function isn't as important, but certainly in our younger population, that is important. And it's always a little bit of a, you know, when do you start testosterone? You know, I have 25-year-olds who have low testosterone. They need treatment. But I should be very cautious with my 25-year-olds that I'm protecting spermatogenesis, right? Various pharmaceuticals who makes the Kysetrix is just doing a really long-term study on spermatogenesis. The early studies to get all the authorizations showed no effect on spermatogenesis. They're now doing a much longer-term study to see if that pans out. But it looks like it's going to. It looks like we're going to not see that effect, so it's not going to affect fertility for men. I'm going to reserve saying that's 100%. But we'll follow. We can follow that. We can follow that very easily on younger men. And then I think if you look at the effects on LH and FSH, it should not. We're not seeing that same effect that I see with testosterone. You know, as a female, so they make it right now in dosing. So typically, it's anywhere from 200 milligrams twice a day to 400 milligrams twice a day. So it depends on, you know, how much testosterone you need. So it's a high dose for women. But one of the things I'm having some women do who want to try it is actually freeze the capsules and then cut them. Because once they're frozen, they're a gel cap, basically, because testosterone is an oil base, right? So they're a gel cap and then cut the capsule and try it in a smaller dose for women. Because it's a nice option for women, particularly because it does have a little more rapid act. And for women, particularly for like things like libido, where, you know, that seems to be a problem for a lot of women, you can actually get a little bit more of a direct effect. So if you do it in the evening, you can get a little bit more direct effect to help a libido too. So we're kind of experimenting with that with women right now. They will hopefully eventually come out with some female dosing on it. That would be nice, but they're hitting the male market first.
Right. I've got a few questions to get into here. The first question, so let's just use an example. Let's say that your normal injectable dose is 150 milligrams a week. What does that equate to for you to take this pill daily?
It's probably going to be, so 150 to 200 milligrams is probably going to be about 400 milligrams twice a week. Okay. Although I have been able, some guys, 100 to 150, get away with the 200 milligram twice a day dosing as well. So 200 milligram twice a day dosing, if you're in that 100 to 150 range, if you're more up closer to the 200 a weekly range, then probably going to have to get up to more of a 400 twice a day dosing.
And then
to get the same levels.
Okay. And then, so let's say somebody like me that's been on TRT now for roughly about 10 years, because I started like in my early 30s, like an idiot doing it myself, but that's beside the point. Obviously, my LH and FSH is bottomed out. Now, right. Let's say that I switch over would those numbers come up or would they stay just like they are?
Yeah, it's hard to say. I think in the younger population, you know, and we don't have enough long-term experience yet to say for men who have been suppressed for a long time, are we going to see them now start to improve testicular function? Don't know the answer to that. Okay. I would say in a couple of my younger guys who had suppressed LH and FSHs, but I'm talking about my 20, 30-year-olds, and I've switched them over to the oral form, that they have had improvements in their LH and FSH. Is that going to happen to you? You know, who's been on now for, you know, how old are you? 40?
42.
40, yeah, 42. So at 42, are you going to be able to recover? 42 is still young. It'd be interesting to see. I think that's where our experience and more doctors using this. There are so few doctors right now who are even aware of this drug, right? I mean, you're in this biz and you haven't heard about it, right?
No.
It's pretty, you know, it's still has a long way to go in terms of educating people. But they're, you know, I know Allie's doing her Silverback Summit coming up. I know they're going to be there. I think, you know, so they're trying to get out there now and get a little bit more recognition. So I think we'll start seeing them grow, and then we'll have more data. We'll have more, wow, I am seeing my patients actually reverse on this, right? I've only been using this now for, you know, a few months because it's really only been available that long. And so I think this is going to be a fun new sort of venture, and we can follow. You and I talk 6 months from now, we'll have a lot more data to put together. But I think it's such a nice new option for people, because you're right. I have a lot of guys who do not want to deal with injections, especially if you're traveling or things like that, right? And you're having to travel with needles. You know, I have guys who are traveling a lot, you know, and they're on, you know, planes going overseas and things like that. And, you know, they're gone for a month at a time and they're having to travel with their needles and their injectable vials of testosterone. It's just a little bit of a hassle, right?
This is
going to be a whole lot easier.
It just gets annoying. I mean, when you've been doing it forever, it's not
for
like
a long
it
time.
Hurts. Yeah, it doesn't hurt. It's not this. It's not that.
It's just tedious, right?
Yeah.
You know, I do tons of peptide injections and it's just tedious, and I fall off the wagon because it's just tedious, right?
Yes.
And so anything that we can make easier in our lives is certainly going to be a welcome change.
Yes, it's like I get up and everything's in my kitchen in the cupboard there, and it's like I gotta shut the window and da 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 da. And eat. Like this morning I bled a little bit and it got on the floor, just stupid, you know, whatever. And my wife's like, what's that on the floor? And I'm just looking at her like, fuck, I don't know, you know? And then I realized. Here's another question for you about that. So I know that most people don't really have estrogen trouble on TRT, but like for me, if I go over 200 milligrams of test, I start to get estrogen conversion. How's the estrogen conversion on this? Would it be similar or is it
work? Seems to be much less. We're seeing much less aromatization to estrogen as well with the oral, it just as it's going through the lymphatic system, because that has to do with the metabolism of the testosterone, right? When you're going directly into the lymphatics, we're not seeing that aromatization. So much less. So it's one of the groups I've switched over are my guys who I really have trouble controlling estrogen conversion. This seems to be a much better option for those guys. So I think that's going to be, again, will we see some guys still convert? Maybe, I don't know. Again, don't have enough experience with it yet, but just if you look at the mechanism of why testosterone aromatizes, you should see less of it with this lymphatic version.
That's what I was hoping to hear. So that's
So I think this is going to be, I mean, honestly, this is going to be really, you know, a game changer in our world. You know, we'll see. I don't know if you're going to get up to like, you know, our bodybuilders who are doing, but you know, really super high, super physiologic doses. Maybe you can't dose to that level with an oral form. Don't know. But I think that, you know, for most of us, this is going to be where you can get a good, really nice high physiologic level of testosterone. And again, I think that dual cycling, that getting a little bit in the morning, getting a little bit in the afternoon, you know, when we do injections, even if you're doing like a twice a week injection, you know, you still get this like peak, drop, right? So,
yeah.
You know, you're super high. If you test your testosterone right after you've injected it, it's going to show up really high in your blood test, right? If you test it, you know, the day before you do your injection, it's going to be really low or, you know, somewhat low. You know, so if we can keep this a little bit more of this, which is what testosterone normally does, that should be better for our body. It should be better for our brains. It should be better for muscle building, because that's really how the body was designed to do it.
Yes, this is, I swear to you, I was looking at you and I was like, when you were talking about it at the Mr. Olympia, and I was trying to not look like a dipshit because I'm just staring at you like, what, you know, like.
Yeah, but you're right.
I'll
tell you, even in my field, I would say 1 out of every 100 of doctors who are doing true functional hormone medicine know about it yet. So these guys are trying to get out there. They're trying to promote it. We're trying to help them. We're trying to, you know, get word out, because I think it's such a nice option for people. For me, I'm excited as a woman. I'm excited for some female dosing on it, honestly, because I think the same thing with women. I think with women, the problem is, you get these super high levels if you're doing injections, right? These super high levels that come down. Or people who are doing pellets, the same thing. You put a pellet in, your levels are super high for a while, and then they drop down, right?
Yeah.
So you get this super physiologic levels for a while just to maintain the nice normal level for some period of time. Mm-hmm. And, you know, then you're going to potentially get some of the side effects associated with these high levels, you know, just so that you can, at most of the time, be at a normal level. So if you can avoid that, I think we're going to see less problems with women with acne and hair loss and things like that by using these kind of more smaller doses in a physiologic fashion. So I'm excited for them to come around. I don't know when they're going to start working on it. It's too bad. Too bad that women always get a little bit thrown into the downside. But I am going to try, even myself, I'm going to try playing with cutting, you know, the little capsule in half. I thought it might screw up the absorption, but I talked to them and the scientific advisor just recently, and he said, no, it doesn't matter. It's not the capsule that's causing the absorption. It's the oil base that is in itself that's affecting absorption, so you can sit very safely. Like, you couldn't do that with a slow release medication because the capsule's too important. If you cut it, you screw that up.
Yeah.
But this is not the same. I mean, it doesn't change the way it's absorbed by cutting it. So that's an option. It's even an option if guys want to save money potentially. You know, if you can go with a lower dose, you could buy the higher dose capsule and then, you know.
So what was the name of this again, and what was the drug company that was making it?
The drug company is called Marius, Marius Pharmaceuticals. Okay. And the drug is called Kyzetrix, Kyzatrex.
Excellent. Okay, cool.
Yeah, and again, can't go to your pharmacy. You can't have your doctor write you a prescription for this and go into your pharmacy. They don't know what you are talking about, okay? So you're going to have to find a doctor who works with the compounding pharmacies. And I will tell you, there's not a lot of compounding pharmacies that are using this either. They're only right now working with a few compounding pharmacies. We work with New BioAge, who is working with Marius to distribute the product. So you have to find a pharmacy that also can get the product for you. And there's not a lot of pharmacies. So for those of you who want it, who want to educate your doctor about it, New BioAge, NUBIOAGE, is a pharmacy that is working with Marius to get that product to your doctor, you know, for you. So basically they can send the prescription to New BioAge. New BioAge will send it to you.
This is one of the reasons why I love these so much. It's like, so we're talking, I had some things like, okay, that I know I want to talk to you about, but you just brought me onto something else that I don't think there's enough information on. I think you would be well versed on, and I want to get this information out there for women that are looking. Well, first of all, what kind of symptoms does a woman have that may be a little different than a man in terms of low testosterone, and what ages and what kind of things cause that in a woman? Because some people don't get it. Like, and I get it from being in the bodybuilding world, but if a man crushes their estrogen, we got a problem. We got a big problem, right? And same with the women. I know that estrogen's dominant in women and vice versa testosterone, but I don't think people truly grasp the concept of you still need some, right?
Exactly. You know, obviously our portion of estrogen testosterone is much different than you guys, but we absolutely need testosterone, and we need it for the exact same things guys do, right? We need it for libido, we need it for orgasm, we need it for muscle building, we need it for fat loss. And it gets so ignored in women. It's sad. I mean, and for orthopedics, so my background is from orthopedic world, and I put a lot of my orthopedic patients, if they're trying to heal a fracture or trying to heal an injury and they have no androgens on board, they can't do it. And so it's very funny. I put recently a patient who was having surgery on some anabolics, actually, just to help her heal from surgery. And of course, her doctor came back and was like, what the hell? What are you doing that for? You know, so for women, it gets really neglected. You know, the gynecologist may look at progesterone and estrogen in women as they're getting menopausal, but not testosterone. And the problem with testosterone is it starts dropping very young. Mm-hmm. So when you look at women, you know, usually progesterone starts dropping at a very young age, testosterone starts dropping at a young age. Estrogen stays high pretty long, and that's why you get these women who start having that estrogen-dominant body. They have that kind of big belly, big breasts, skinny little legs. You see them all over, right? I was at a Billy Joel, Stevie Nicks concert, so it was all people my age, right? And, you know, all these women had that exact body build, right? They all had, like, the little round, you know, belly, you know, boobs and no muscle. And, you know, and that's just this estrogen dominant state where you have no testosterone and, you know, you have no progesterone. So you have to balance these hormones. And as we age, it becomes even more critical because maintaining muscle is so critical to our overall longevity.
Yes.
You know, I always say muscle is sort of our currency to life, and you have to have muscle to be able to do everything in this world. If you get sick and you don't have muscle mass, you're not going to do nearly as well. If you have an injury, you're not going to do nearly as well. So we have to maintain muscle. Absolutely impossible to maintain muscle if you do not have testosterone, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I see these docs who are telling women to go exercise and their testosterone levels are, you know, 0.003, you know, for free testosterone. I'm like, you can go exercise all you want and you might as well just throw yourself down the stairs because you're going to get real sore, but you're not going to build any muscle. And, you know, and so it's sad because these women are trying. They're truly going to the gym. They're trying to exercise and they're trying to do everything right, eat right. And they're not losing fat. They're not putting on muscle. And that's because they're, you know, they're working with a detriment of having no testosterone.
Yep.
But let's look at the younger women, because that's a group that scares me a lot. Because when you look at what like birth control pills do, and you know, almost 50%, if not more, of women are on birth control pills from a young age, some even, you know, starting at 13.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, when you look at that, you know, and sometimes that may be the best choice to prevent pregnancy. Obviously, an unwanted pregnancy is also a very bad thing. But there are other options. What women do need to realize is they are taking birth control pills raise something called sex hormone binding globulin, which a lot of your listeners are aware of, but a lot of people aren't. And sex hormone binding globulin binds the testosterone, so it's not available to utilize for muscle building and all the things you need it for. And so what you'll see in these women is they have very, very high sex hormone binding globulin levels when they're on birth control pills. So they have no free testosterone, no available testosterone.
Mm-hmm.
So they have trouble building muscle. They have more injuries. They get more depressed. They get more anxious. Remember, testosterone, just like in men, symptoms of low testosterone in men, lots of times that anxiety, depression, that sort of low grade, just feeling beaten down by the world. Same thing happens in women too, right? It's a little why men are always a little bit, you know, tend to be a little less anxious and a little less depressed than women oftentimes is this, you know, testosterone is very protective of them until it drops. Well, same thing with us. So we have this very protective hormone that's telling us, you know, you can take on the world. You can, you know, fight against all this stuff. If I have no testosterone, I feel defeated, feel like I can't really do this stuff. Also, just like in men, helps with sleep, right? Testosterone, you know, if you think about guys fall asleep after sex, it's because this big surge in androgens. Same thing with women. If you have more androgens at night, you're going to sleep better. You're going to have more, you know, you're going to have more restful sleep. You know, so we always think about it for muscle building and maybe libido, but think about it for all the brain functions too. You know, depression, anxiety, sleep quality. Those are all really important. But there's very few women, very few, over the age of 40 who will have normal testosterone levels, you know? And I will tell you, because I have a lot of young patients as well, I would say at least half of my young females have low testosterone levels. So if you're on birth control pills, you may need to supplement with some testosterone, right? And again, the dosing on that is so variable. You have to find the right dose, you know, and you have to look at how people are metabolizing it so they don't get side effects from it. But it's so critical, you guys, to well-being. And, you know, I get sad when I look at these women in the gym who I see over and over and over again in the gym. And they're there and they're doing things and they're actually lifting weights and maybe not heavy enough, but they're not, you know, they have no strength because they don't have any androgens, right?
Yeah.
So, it's sort of the same symptoms as in men. It's just that in men, they're protected a lot longer than we are, right? The testosterone levels, well, I won't say anymore, but used to be testosterone levels didn't start dropping until men got a little bit older. So they were more protected for a longer period of time. In women, they start dropping quite young. I mean, our optimal testosterone levels are usually around, you know, 15 to 18, honestly.
Right.
So really young.
You know, one of the things that I want to stress while I've got you here to people in general is when you go to a doctor, their answer to everything is just a CBC and a CMP panel, if anything, right?
Right.
Complete blood counts and metabolic profiles, but they don't look at hormonal panels. They don't do comprehensive cholesterol testing. I found out some things about myself. Had I not been educated and
worked
the proper tests, you know.
Exactly.
Lucky I caught some of the things early, right? So I think it's important that people understand, look, there's plenty of resources out there that you can go get online, or you can just tell your doctor, look, I want this shit checked, you know.
And people don't realize you can order your own labs. You can, you know, the only reason to go through a doctor for your own labs is if you want to run through insurance. But most labs are very inexpensive. And you can go to, you know, LabCorp, just order your own labs. If you're going to cash pay that, you don't need a doctor to order labs for you. People don't even realize that. You can very easily order your own lab panels. And you just need to learn how to interpret them, which, you know, there, like you said, there's resources to do. We put together a whole course on this. So we have this Human Optimization Academy, which if you guys go to BOI.academy, we teach you, how do you read your CBC? How do you read your CMP? How do you read a lipid panel? What lipid panel do you need to know, right? You're right. It's not just your cholesterol. That means very little. So you have to know your hormone levels from a young age on. Yeah. And that, you know, you look at the traditional lab panel your doctor gets, which is a CBC, a CMP, and a TSH maybe, and a lipid, which is, you know, just your basic lipid. It's not very useful for longevity.
No.
It might tell you you're not dying at that moment in time, but it's not very useful for anything else.
Yeah. I mean, you check your LDL, your HDL, and your triglycerides. Great. But you don't know your ApoB, your LP little a, your particle
exactly.
size. The stuff that'll really kill you.
Really kill you. Exactly. Right.
You know,
I'm a fan of high cholesterol. We know that high cholesterol is associated with better brain quality, better muscle quality, but it has to be the right type of cholesterol. And that's not HDLs and LDLs. It's ApoB and ApoA. Nobody tests it. You need to know what your ApoB is. You need to know if you have an LP little a. If that's high, that's really critical to work on modifications. So that's stuff that, you know, if your doctor's not doing, and most doctors don't. I see people all the time who hand me their lab profiles. And I'm like, okay, this is useless to me.
You know, I was working with Dr. O'Connor last year, and he made me go get a calcium score, and he said, it's probably going to be zero. You know, you do everything perfect. And I went in there, and my score was 120. And so I start to dig, and I find out my LP little a was like 350.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow, yes. And the guys, for you guys don't know it, LP little a is a genetically inherited thing.
Yes.
Diet won't change it. Exercise won't change it. Mm-hmm. You know, statin drugs won't change it. There's nothing that will change the LP little a. You have to work on other modifications to try and make sure your blood, your cholesterol kind of stickier in a sense.
Yes.
So basically heavier and stickier. And so unfortunately, you know, Dylan, you know, and my husband has a high LP little a, two of my kids do, you know, it's just a bad, unfortunate gene. In the future, we'll have gene modification therapies and things like that to get rid of it. For now, you have to know you have it because, as you said, it is a really big risk factor and most people never gets tested.
No, had I not done that, I have a 30% blockage and then they just, you statin this, statin that. I went to the Mayo Clinic and they told me, because I said, look, I want PCSK9 inhibitors.
Right.
I want Vascepa, I want Repatha. And they looked me in the eye and told me that would be bad practice. The statin is the answer. And I told my mom and my wife in the car back home for 3 hours, what a waste of time that was, that a statin has no bearing on LP little a. I knew more than they did about it.
Right.
So
exactly. And I'll tell you the main reason is even that, you know, when statin drugs get recommended over PCSK inhibitors, because PCSK inhibitors are much safer and much better drugs.
Yes.
It simply costs. It's because it's hard to get a PCSK authorized. Your doctor has to go through all these hoops to get pre-authorization for it. They're expensive. And so the protocol is put someone on a statin drug. It's cheap. It's easy. You know, and if they fail that, somebody may talk to you about a PCSK inhibitor, but it should be really a first line defense in somebody like you, right?
Yes. I had to go through this process where they wanted this to be elevated, that to be down. And
I'm like,
that's impossible. It can't be done. And that makes no sense because I'm hurting myself. Anyway, you know how it is when you know people. I got both, you know, and so every year it's
most people aren't like you, right? So then what do you do, right?
It's
really hard.
Uh-huh.
And that's, you know, that's a case where PCSK inhibitors sometimes are really hard to work with insurance on. And they're too expensive for any of us to afford. They're thousands of dollars a month, right? So you don't get insurance help on those. But there's workarounds. If you know, if your doctor knows how to work with the system, they can typically get them for you, right?
I just had that battle right now. My Vascepa renewal came up and they wanted to put me on the generic. I know one of the head people that produces it. And he said, no, the generic is missing X, Y, and Z. Don't do it. And I just fought with them till they gave it to me finally.
Because
I'm a different breed. I'm just not going to take fucking no for an answer.
That's what scares you is that, you know, 90% of the population is just relying on their doctor, what the doctor tells them. And, you know, unfortunately, then they're missing all these things. And that's why you have to listen to Dylan. You have to educate yourself. You've got to go learn because you can't get it from your doctor. I keep thinking maybe medicine will catch up. Maybe it'll be better. You know, I'm not going to say medicine has no bearing. It does. I mean, you know, there's a lot of traditional medicine that's saving lives. So, you know, I'm a traditional medical doctor from training, but I will tell you, I don't do most of the things I learned in my traditional medical career because it's not the right way to go. But don't, you know, this is a balance. You don't just say, you know, I'm dying of a horrible infection. You need antibiotics, right?
So, right. Yeah. Of course. Yeah. I mean, I even just recently I had to go through that where first of all, my liver values got elevated through the roof. And then I started to have, I found some problems in my urine when I got it tested. And then I got a rash out of nowhere. And I went to the ER and they told me, oh, you're fine. And I looked at her and I said,
I'm fine.
No, I'm not fine. And then I did it. I had blood in my urine out of nowhere.
That's
and
fine.
Then they said, oh. I said, you know what? Fuck this. I'm getting online. I went to myuti.com, acted like I was my wife, got my own shit and was fine in a week. I mean, that's what it's come to, where it's like, okay, people do think they're WebMD when they get online and go read a couple things. I'm not advocating that at all, but I am saying be diligent because you know this.
Learn.
Yes. General practitioner means general. They're not specialized really in anything. Somebody like you is a specialist. Like that's what I seek out, a specialist for a problem, you know?
Right, but even if you went to your specialist urologist, for instance, or, you know, your specialist endocrinologist because you feel crappy and your thyroid hormones, you know, and they test the TSH and they go, no, your thyroid looks fine. And you're like, God, I really feel like my hair is falling out and I'm freezing cold all the time. And I'm really sluggish. Are you sure my thyroid's fine? And then you go and you do a full thyroid panel on that person where you look at a TSH, a free T3, a thyroglobulin, a thyroid antibody. And you realize they've got thyroid antibodies. They've got a high thyroglobulin. They have a low free T3. And you're like, no, your thyroid is not fine. A TSH was just not enough to find the problem, right?
Exactly.
But your traditional medicine doctor does not do that. Even your endocrinologist doesn't do that most of the time. So even a specialist, unfortunately, you guys are going to have to, I hate to say it, but you have to do some education for yourself. And you have to, and then you have to find a doctor who will work with you, right? So even if your doctor doesn't know it, if your doctor, you try and talk to them about something, and they'll go, no, that's just not the way it is. And they won't discuss it with you, then find a new doctor. I have people teach me things all the time. You know, I have people who argue with me about things. And if they can prove their point and convince me that they're right and I'm wrong, great. I love that. Bring me the evidence and I'm willing to read it. But you should have a doctor who's willing to talk to that stuff about you. So you have to find, even if it's a traditional doctor, somebody who's willing to say, yeah, I don't know about that. But, you know, if you know about that, let me read the research, you know?
Exactly. That's the thing. If you feel uncomfortable or if something just seems off, it's not like there's one doctor in existence. Just go find somebody else.
Yeah, right. Look for somebody else. Right. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. Okay. So I want to shift gears a little bit here because, you know, kind of my background is more like research chemicals, peptides, SARMs, and then hormones, which we already talked about. So I told you this when we were talking before that I was like, I didn't know people like you even existed. I just figured that like my whole realm is all of these bros I have to deal with and all this bullshit. And when I started studying peptides, it was 2011. They had just kind of research chemicals were just kind of a new thing.
Right, yeah.
You know, nobody talked about them. Nobody knew what SARMs or peptides were at all. Right. And there were shit, I bet you there was maybe 10 peptides to choose from on a site, and it was your GHRPs, your Pomerelin, and CJC-1295, and that was about it. I mean, there was
Was not much, right?
Yeah. No, and SARMs-wise, yes. SARMs-wise, there was two. It was 2866 and S4, and then two sites at MK677. It was like $400 a bottle. Nobody bought it. It was just way out of reach, and nobody understood it, right? So all you knew is you got a ton of water retention from it when you first started, and that was about it. You know, so tell me. I want to start off with this: when did for you, especially, when did you kind of realize just how wonderful peptides were, and when do you feel like it started to break out more mainstream, I guess, or get more popular? Because so, like, for me, with SARMs, when they got popular, was when prohormones got banned, and all of the people selling pro hormones freaked out. Like, what are we going to do? And then they started, you know, shifting to SARMs, right? So what do you think caused the peptides to break through? And when did it kind of hit for you? Like, whoa, like we got something here.
Well, you know, it's kind of interesting because, you know, you kind of come from this sort of bodybuilding world, you know, in the bro science world. And it's really where hormones, I remember when I first started learning about hormones, the bro science had more than the regular science did on, right? You kind of go, oh, okay, well, they can give, the regular science can kind of give me some of the stuff, but the bro science people were figuring out how to use these in an effective fashion. You know, what could you do? What were the side effects? How can you push these? So you know, it was very interesting, this bridge between science and bro science, because the bro science people were practically putting this stuff into action and seeing what happened, right?
Mm-hmm.
They were doing the end of one experiments and saying, well, if you take too much of this, this bad thing happens. And if, you know, but you can take a lot of this. And so, you know, so the same thing started happening with peptides. I, you know, I think one of the world experts really on peptides is William Seeds. For the guys that don't know it, he wrote a great book called The Peptide Handbook. It's a really good, if you guys want just a basic education on peptides, it's just a really good, probably have it here. Oh yeah, Peptide Protocols. This is a great book by Bill Seeds. And it just gives you all the different peptides and sort of how to use them. But Bill came from an orthopedic background like I did. And I met Bill actually kind of through more of a, you know, an outside realm, but started hearing him. And this was probably now 7 years ago or so. He was actually sort of making his own peptides. And he was using them kind of in his orthopedic population of patients. And I thought, oh, wow. Because I came from this orthopedic background where you know, it's a little bit of, you know, somebody, you know, hurts their knee and then you stick steroids in it, and you put steroids in it. And then finally you know, do surgery on it and then you replace it. And, you know, it's sort of a stupid field. We never really fixed anything. You just kept sort of patching people together until something was replaced. And then you do it for the next joint, the next joint, the next joint. And now what we know so much more is that, you know, these orthopedic injuries, degenerative joint disease is really a disease. And we can do so much modifying that disease using things like peptides that we never had the option before. So when I met Bill and he was doing this, I thought, oh my gosh, I'm going to bring this into my orthopedic practice. I will start helping people heal better using these things. And so I started dabbling it more within the, you know, the musculoskeletal world, even things like nandrolone. I mean, I was using nandrolone primarily, you know, you think about in the bodybuilding world, but I was using it in my little old ladies who had fractures, right? Because you could finally get them to actually heal a fracture because they would build their bone density up. They'd get some muscle mass on them. So, you know, so I used, you know, nandrolone in my little old ladies. And if you look back at the literature, that's where nandrolone actually got its medical start, was in helping in osteoporosis, heal osteoporosis, or MK677. Same thing. I used it a lot in my little old people who I couldn't get enough food into them. I couldn't get muscle mass in them. You know, I could use MK. I could get them to start eating more when they were trying to heal and recover, right? Yeah, because it increases your appetite so much. And so you have these people who are trying to recover from surgery, you know, and they're 75 years old and they're trying to recover from an injury, like they fell and they have a little vertebral fracture and they're not eating protein. So, you know, you can use things like MK or nandrolone and you could actually get them to heal. So that's where I started sort of dabbling in this, is kind of in that, you know, bridging that world. And then started expanding more into the performance world. I opened my longevity clinic about 18, 19 years ago now, but I actually did both my orthopedic by day and my longevity clinic by night. Mm-hmm. And then only really 5 years ago did I kind of bring them together, because my orthopedic clinic was just silly to try and teach people anything in 15 minutes. So, you know, left, and just now all my orthopedic people see me here. But the key is that they started in this realm of, we can use them for healing. Well, now we realize we could use them a whole lot more in performance. And the bro science people knew that way before, you know, but it took in the medical world moving from this, okay, how can these actually be utilized in a true healing capacity? And now we can push them into that performance side a little bit more. So I started using peptides and learning more about peptides about probably 7 years ago, and mostly from Bill Seeds, because he's really, I think, one of the biggest experts in them. And then why did it, you know, everybody start getting into them? Because, you know, we'll give the bro science the credit on this one much more than the doctors, because that's who started expanding them, you know, word of mouth, right? Wow. I tore my tendon and I was better in 3 months as opposed to a year later, right? You started seeing them in the athletes coming out. They're all banned by WADA, unfortunately, but
yeah,
you know, you started seeing them come out in these realms too. But used to be, you know, even before peptides got so famous, the pro athletes were using them a lot. Mm-hmm. You know, so I think that's what expanded its realm. And now it's only, you know, really been, I'm on faculty, I teach peptides to doctors. And, you know, I would still say not very many doctors know much about peptides. But hopefully, I don't know. I mean, I would like to say the same thing happened with hormones, right? That now everybody should be using hormones, but they're not. Is everybody ever going to use peptides? No. But hopefully so I think, you know, you and I have watched the growth, just like we've seen, you know, the growth in hormones and anabolics and SARMs and things like that. We've watched that growth a little bit. You get to see it from the more practical aspect. I think in the medical world, it's still not very, none of it's very well accepted, right?
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
Well, and it's twofold, right? Because there's good and bad in both. So like for where I'm getting it from, the good is, well, I guess this is good and bad. there's so much trial and error done. Now there's a lot of mistakes made and people
made along the road, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's, and I hate to say, I don't want to sound like negative about this. It's helped me learn information wise, but it's, I've seen people hurt themselves, which I don't, I hate seeing, but it's helped me to educate others. Don't do this, you know, like don't use it this way.
I mean, that's, you're right. But how, you know, there is that little piece. I mean, that is unfortunately the fact that there are people who are willing to experiment a little bit. You know, that's throughout time how we've learned something. It's like, oh, look, there's this really cool berry, and somebody started thinking, oh, this would work medicinally, and it did in a high, in a low dose, right? And then somebody ate too much of it and died. Like, well, don't do that, right? Unfortunately, that there is a little bit of a learning curve to that, right? Unless you have the ability to test everything on animals first. I mean, the good thing about peptides is most of them have had a lot of good animal testing behind them already, right? We know in general, these are very safe. In fact, much safer than hormones.
Oh,
it's very hard to hurt yourself with a peptide. It is much easier to hurt yourself with a hormone than a peptide.
100%.
Things like BPC or thymosin alpha 1, or you could massively dose them. You could bathe yourself in them and nothing bad would happen. And we know that from a lot of animal studies. Now, we've done it with patients, right? We've used it in patients and we've tried it and we see the outcomes. Yeah, but kudos to the people who in our world have had the guts to try things, and we've had the opportunity to learn from them, right? I mean, even ourselves, right? I'm sure you've done things where, like, well, that was a bad idea. But you're like, oh, I'll try this new supplement, and maybe I'll try it at a little higher dose because it wasn't working well, and then also something horrible happens, and you're like, okay, well, I won't do that again. So I think we're always going to learn somewhat by trial of error, by N of one experiments. The key is trying to put these N of one experiments together. I'm involved with this big group of doctors. We call ourselves the Longevity Docs, and it's kind of from across the world. But we have this, just WhatsApp chat line, and we just throw stuff into it. And you start, as data starts accumulating, you could start putting together, sort of a clinical trial.
Yeah.
Despite the fact that it's not an expensive, pharmaceutically run clinical trial, when enough people start utilizing something in a similar fashion, we can put together these trials. And all it takes is a bunch of us kind of putting our information together. So these N of one trials have a lot of use, right?
What a dream to be a part of something like that. Oh man, I would, because for me, it's like, for me to have this conversation with you right now is, would have seemed like a year ago an impossibility, where I'm handcuffed to like, oh, this is underground. Oh, I got to talk to so-and-so. And
That's interesting, right? Yeah.
Yeah. For every one guy that's kind of more like me, there's 50 that are just like, have this mentality where there's nothing more important than today. We don't think long term. More is always better. Like all of this shit I've been fighting for so long, like literally fighting for so long. And I just want to thank you for something that you did for me that you don't know you did for me, which is several things. But when I started, like when we were talking there and I sat and listened to some of the things you said, and then talking more alternative medicines, deeper thoughts, and realizing there are people like you out there, it made me realize that when I got COVID, I had the time to sit and think and read, because I thought that was like, I bitched to you right away. I'm sick. I don't feel good. It gave me the opportunity to realize what I have been doing all this time was the term biohacking. And I had the opportunity then to start conversing with people. And now I found what I was supposed to be doing. And I kind of talked to you about this. And now I've been doing the same thing for 12, 13, 14 years. And I'll never regret it because it gave me a start. But meeting you, it showed me like, okay, now you're ready to move the direction you were supposed to go. There's people out there. It's not this underground society or whatever anymore, And so for me, I couldn't be more appreciative, because I feel like I've been grouped with something that I'm internally not, it opened doors for me. And so I'm just throwing this in.
I love that, Dylan, because you are right, I guess, that we couldn't have had this conversation a while ago. We couldn't have talked about, wow, nandrolone can actually be used in medicine and peptides, and because that was too underground. So you're right. We've made advances, right?
Yes.
And, one of our passions at Bodo Longevity Institute is because there's brilliant people like you who are passionate and knowledgeable from life experience, right? Which goes a long way. See, these doctors who went to medical school and they learned this sort of set protocols of things. And one of the things we realized is it's very hard to unteach these set protocols.
Yeah.
You know, one of the reasons I left my orthopedic practice was because literally one day one of my partners came up to me and I started this practice. I'd been in practice for 30 years and, you know, and one of my partners going, you know, we don't really want, and they knew I'd started doing peptides and things in the practice. You know, we don't really want you doing this stuff here anymore. We don't really do medicine here. We do orthopedics. And I'm experiencing, I have a very good friend who's a cardiologist and he's in a cardiology practice, but he's doing, you know, what we would do with cardiology, right? He's not going to be putting everybody on statins and PCSKs. And recently his group came to him and said, you know what? We don't really like you using hormones and peptides on the patients. We just want you to use statins and, you know, and so he's probably going to move over and join us because, you know, so what we've realized is it's very, very hard to take traditional medicine and turn them into educating people in this stuff, right? So we're going to have to rely on an army of passionate, smart people like you to educate other people who become smart, passionate people and educate other people, right? Because I don't think, as much as I would love to say medicine's going to change, I just don't think it's going to.
It's tough because of the money and the trickle-down effect.
Right.
It's like a hierarchy of order.
And there's something else, right? There's something else that's controlling it, right?
And you get down to the doctors and they say, well, if you write too much of this or don't write enough of this, we're just going to fucking drop you from the insurance altogether. And doctors can't lose network like that. It'll just wreck their practices. So, you know, and it's just this, like, you get stuck with, okay, for example, I come from bodybuilding forums and things like that is how I got started. And the whole ideal there is, oh, doctors don't know shit. And that's what gets passed around. And that's what is thought in that whole community. And I fell into that for years, once again, until I met somebody like you and realized, no. Doctors are not full of shit. They know way more than we do. You just have to find the right one, right? And so now knowing that that's there, that's, like I said, that gave me an escapability. Like, okay, I don't belong here. Yes. And these are the people I need
to
be
bridge it, right. I'm bridge the two, right?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. And yeah, that's so good and so cool. And that's how we're going to change the paradigm.
Yes.
Right. Is people like you coming in and doing this and your listeners going, you know, wow, okay, I can actually change this. I can actually do something. I can take control of my health. I don't have to rely on a doctor to do it. I can order my own labs. If I learn how to read those labs, you know, don't abandon your doctors altogether. I don't want you guys to, you know, die because of a horrible infection, but you've got to know the questions to ask. You've got to find the right physicians to work with. You have to, you know, that's where people like you can be huge advisors to people, right? You know, even if you don't know it all, you know, that's one of the things, you know, Dylan and I talked about is we, you know, we can educate people and then they can act as advisors to other people, right?
Yes. It's so important to have that to.
Yeah. It's huge.
Listen, even when I told you my liver numbers were up, they weren't just kind of up. I went in there and my fucking AST or ALT, I can't remember which one, was almost 300. And he's like,
wow, they were like really high. Wow. Yeah.
Well, it's elevated a little bit. And I got in the car and I called my wife and I said, can you fucking believe this? It's kind of elevated. I said, elevated's like 75 to 100 is elevated. So, you know, and I was blasting niacin and red yeast rice because I panicked with the heart stuff. So
right,
I was
so that you drink up the liver toxicity, right?
Well, yeah. You know, I got my LP little A down in the 150s, 170s, but at what cost? So I had to scale back, right? Okay. So I want to talk to you about, you know how important this one was to me, was the GLPs. Now, you are extremely well-versed on this. There is a ton of bad fuck, where do I start, right? Tell me some of the biggest misconceptions on them first, and then can you just give a brief synopsis of what they actually do and why they're beneficial?
So GLP-1 agonists, which you guys know, like the Ozempics and Wegovys and Mounjaros, you know, those include semaglutide, which is the first generation. That's like Ozempic, and then Mounjaro is the second generation, tirzepatide. And the GLP-1 agonists, basically, glucagon-like peptide receptor agonists sit on the glucagon-like peptide receptor, and they have all sorts of benefits. One is controlling blood glucose, right? Which is where they first got their start, was in treating diabetes very effectively. And then what they found out is, wow, actually, they also worked very well for weight loss at a little bit higher dose. So that was a much bigger boon than diabetes ever would be. And they made it into the weight loss world. Of course, once they made it into the weight loss world, everybody started using them and they became hugely controversial. Like, number one, everybody's cheating to lose weight. And they have all these horrendous side effects, right? That's all you read about in the press. It's like, now you know, somebody has a complete gastric obstruction and people are dying and people are losing all their muscle mass. And I will tell you guys, I know GLP-1s very well, and that is complete and utter bullshit. So these are very, I will tell you, we used GLP-1 agonists for a long time before they ever got into the weight loss world, not just for diabetes, but in our longevity world for all sorts of other things, because there are GLP-1 receptors on every organ in your body, including your brain, including your liver, including your kidneys, your immune cells, and your muscle. And in fact, used appropriately, when they were first designed, they were actually found to push glucose into the muscle, so help with muscle building in a diabetic population who was having trouble muscle building. They would actually help muscle building. So really what happened is people started dosing these inappropriately. They started using them, you know, sort of rampantly, and you started seeing the bad consequences of doing anything that way. If I take a GLP-1 agonist and I have no appetite and I stop eating, I will lose muscle, right?
Right.
And these are very effective drugs at lowering your appetite. I will tell you, remarkably so. People just don't have cravings to eat. The problem is, if you don't have cravings to eat, you also stopped eating all your protein. Mm-hmm. And if I stop eating my protein, I will lose muscle mass. But you can, if you can maintain somebody eating high protein while they're on the GLP-1 agonist, which is sometimes hard, and you have to dose appropriately to do that,
right?
They will put on muscle. So you, as long as you get their protein intake up into the 100 gram, 120 gram, you know, or higher, depending on how big you are, range, you will put on muscle on these and you will lose fat. The fat, the Ozempic face, yeah, you get Ozempic face because you lose all the fat in your face. That's a consequence of losing weight, no matter how you lose weight. But the loss of muscle should not occur. And I do not see it in my patients because I maintain that they have to stay hydrated and they have to eat protein or I will take them off the drug. So I have them send me their macronutrient profiles. I watch what they're eating. If they're not eating enough, I'm like, okay, we have to pull back the drug because you're not eating enough.
Mm-hmm.
So the other thing is that if you're taking these at high doses and not eating enough fiber and things like that, then you start to get horrible constipation and people started getting gastric obstructions. So again, not dosed appropriately, not people following appropriate diets to be on these drugs. I don't see that in my population of patients ever. You will see nausea, side effects, things like that. Sometimes you have to dose them down. But the most powerful thing about these drugs is, and I take a low dose GLP-1 every day, is their effect for other structures. Like you talked about your liver. They are super liver protective. I had an autoimmune liver disease, almost had to have a liver transplant about 20 years ago. So taking an antibiotic that kicked off an autoimmune liver disease. And talk about liver functions, mine were in the thousands, like 1,500. And, you know, finally got it under control, but my liver has never been perfect. And so I take these because they're very liver protective. They're in phase 4 trials for brain, so for dementia prevention. So they're super protective to brain, which is the main reason I take it, is brain and liver, because I had a mother who died of dementia. I do not want that. So I take a low dose. At a low dose, you will not lose weight. I don't need to lose weight. I'm 5'9", 130 pounds, so I don't need to lose weight. But the key is I want a small dose of these in as a neuroprotective. So they're going to get authorization probably in a year or two for dementia prevention. And then you look at immune function. The GLP-1 agonists are tremendous for helping T cell function. So what we do a lot, almost all my patients are on GLP-1 agonists as a longevity agent to protect their immune system, protect their liver. It also converts brown fat or white fat into brown fat. So it takes metabolically inactive fat, turns into metabolically active fat. So they have so many benefits. And the press you're reading, number one, bad press sells. So of course you're going to pick up a magazine that says Ozempic killing people, right? And not, you know, Ozempic's the best wonder drug. And because these are all over the place, you can buy them from any source online now and use them however you want and not know. If I don't, they make you not want to drink too. So you basically got to drink water, you've got to eat protein, and you'll do fine on these drugs. But they should be done with somebody who knows what they're doing and under guidance or learn more about them. But I think these are incredible drugs. You know, if you look at the difference, so there's semaglutide, then tirzepatide, and now retatrutide, which is going to be even the best of the bunch. With even lower side effect profile and more benefits. They all are good. They just are a little bit better each generation. So guys, please, please stop listening to the press on this. These are such valuable drugs. And they also have some really interesting benefits for helping change behaviors. So very interestingly, yeah. So you can use them in addiction. So people who have alcohol or drug addictions, they will actually change the desire to drink or take your drugs. But you can also use them for positive behavior reinforcements. There was a great study done. If you put somebody on GLP-1 agonist and had them exercise continuously, they will more likely adopt that into their lifestyle than if they were not on the GLP-1 agonist. So they seem, because of their brain effect, they actually help brain some of the neural pathways that form to help us reinforce both good or unreinforced bad behaviors. So these are really cool drugs. And I think maybe one of the most advantageous longevity drugs that's come into existence in our past 10 years, honestly.
So for somebody that wanted the benefits like with the liver and, you know, preventing dementia issues and things like that, which one do you recommend and what kind of dose are you thinking?
So I usually end up semaglutide just because it's less expensive and it works, right? But if people can't tolerate semaglutide for some reason or they can afford tirzepatide, then I'll go to that. But I do semaglutide just because it's cheaper and it's effective. The GLP-1 agonists in and of themselves without anything else are effective. So usually I'll use GLP-1 and you microdose it. So instead of doing a bigger dose once a week, you do a small dose. And we're talking about, so a weight loss dose, for instance, of semaglutide is going to be somewhere around 5 milligrams a week. So 2.5 milligrams twice a week or 5 milligrams once a week. So we'll use like maybe 0.5 milligrams twice a week or three times a week. So you're never getting into the weight loss range of the drug, but you're getting the benefit. And smaller people, you can even use a smaller, you might even use 0.25 milligrams three times a week. So you can dose these like a three time a week is, I think, ideal when you're doing them on a preventative basis. I get like injection fatigue, so I usually do twice a week at like a 0.5 milligram twice a week dosing for its protective benefits on myself.
Okay. Selfishly, I was curious about that for myself. So
yeah, I mean, I will tell you, you just from your longevity bend and your biohacker bend, these are really good drugs.
Yes.
For a whole lot of reasons. But the cognitive is really important. None of us want to lose brain function.
And that's why I wanted to bring this up, because I'm versed on them, but not anywhere near like I am other peptides at all.
Yeah.
Because I guess for multiple reasons, but one is because most of the people that I coach and deal with are not really looking for some of that. Now that I know the other benefits of that too, that's significant, especially when it comes to liver, you know.
The liver protective benefits.
Yeah. Because a lot of bodybuilders, especially using oral, you know, toxic steroids, especially that.
Right. You need to do some liver protection. Yeah. And these are actually very, very useful for liver protection.
Excellent. That's awesome. Are there any other benefits there that people aren't aware of that you can think of that are important to disclose?
I mean, I think there's really not one. If you look at, I have a great little picture I show all my patients that, you know, basically shows, you know, and there's kind of, if you name an organ system, these are going to be beneficial for. Their muscles, there's immune, it's kidney, it's liver, it's brain. So there's not much left here. But interestingly, there's two studies that have come out in the past 2 years that show musculoskeletal. So actually in an orthopedic realm, that they are preventative against osteoarthritis as well. So they appear to slow progression or even halt progression of degenerative joint disease. And that's because when you look at these diseases, these are immune-mediated diseases, and I can modify them by modifying the immune system. So I think that's a benefit that we're just learning about and kind of just exploring. But probably that group of patients who have, you know, multi-joint osteoarthritis, who have had, you know, a knee replaced and a hip replaced, those are other people who should be thinking about being on these drugs too.
So do you think that the retruatide will be the best and most popular? Because I know.
I do. You know, but it may be cost prohibitive to be doing. I mean, the good thing is on these smaller doses, it ends up being less expensive, right?
Yeah.
Because, you know, you're not doing them at the massive therapeutic doses for weight loss. You can do a small dose. It's less expensive. The question will be, will the bang for the buck be enough to say it's more beneficial? I don't know that yet. And they are significantly more costly. Semaglutide has come down to a much more reasonable price than the others yet.
Like functionality wise or, you know, benefit wise, is there a significant difference between these three, or is it just price, or what's the main difference?
So the main difference is a semaglutide is just a GLP-1 agonist. Uh-huh. And then retruatide, they added a GIP, a glucagon insulin peptide. So basically GLP, a GIP. And retruatide actually works on three different receptors. So basically each one, and, you know, one of my friends always describes this as like, they're all going to get you to the same place, but one might be like driving your Honda, the other like driving your, you know, your Ferrari, right?
Right.
It's probably going to get you to the same place. It's going to be maybe a little bit better, maybe more well-tolerated at, with the more expensive ones. I don't know at this point. I think especially for weight loss, retruatide will far out surpass the others. Because when you get to these higher doses of these drugs, the side effect profile, like the nausea, is hard to deal with for some people. And so I think that's the key, is that you definitely decrease the side effect profile as you get to the more expensive drugs that added the GLP-1, GIPs. That side effect profile goes down. But at the smaller doses, the side effect are pretty low anyway, right? Yeah. I don't know if the true benefits to other organs besides weight loss are going to be that far surpassed that it's going to be worth the money or not.
Okay.
I don't know if we have the answer to that yet.
Because I'm thinking in my head, I'm like, because I'm going 100 miles an hour here, and I'm like, what would be similar to compare it to? And I'm thinking Viagra, Cialis, Levitra, right? How they went like boom, boom, boom. And what's the ultimate? Well, there's some differences there, but you got a little better, a little better, a little better, right? Over time.
Right,
so.
Right. And these definitely got, from the weight loss perspective, bar none.
Okay.
The third generation retatrutide is going to be by far the best for weight loss. It's going to be more powerful and it's going to have less side effects. But I think if you're using it for its other benefits, I'm not sure it's going to have as much. It's not going to be such a difference.
I'm going to, when I get home from this weekend, I'm going to start just for the benefits that you, I certainly don't need the weight loss benefits.
Exactly. Yeah. You don't need to lose weight. So you have to be careful. But for you, like just a low, like a 0.5 milligram twice a week kind of dosing for you, just for liver protection, for brain protection, really big. And the immune stuff. I see definite improvement in T lymphocyte function on people on these drugs.
That's what I want, is the liver and the immunity. That's yes. I know that you don't have much time left. If I can grab one more question from you that I'm interested in. For you, and I'm sure it's changed over the years, what do you find, and amongst people like yourself, like other doctors that are, you know, utilizing peptides, what is the most commonly used, like one or prescribed one, or is it just a wide variety of ones that people kind of get put on?
I think by far the most commonly used peptide is BPC.
Okay.
I think
that's what I thought.
Everybody knows about it, right? It can be used for so many things, from gut. I mean, orally, it's incredible for gut protection. If you take BPC, like if you're taking an anti-inflammatory drug and you take BPC along with the anti-inflammatory, you completely reduce the damage to the gut that occurs with the anti-inflammatory drugs, completely prevents that. So you can use it orally very nicely for gut protection or for healing ulcers, for people who have a lot of GI distress stuff. And you can use it for all its musculoskeletal benefits. And it has great glucose control benefits. And it has great immune benefits. It's really one of those peptides that, you know, honestly, it's, and we know its safety profile is, you could take a bottle of it and be fine. So, I use it both orally. Orally, you can buy it as a supplement now. So orally, you can simply run a prescription for it. You can buy a supplement. Still is injectable. We have to use it from a compounding pharmacy. But, I do think the injectable works better when we're talking about healing musculoskeletal injuries. For people who just want something, getting it over the counter is great. And then I think, if I look at, the thymic peptide, thymosin alpha 1, thymosin beta 4, thymosin alpha 1 is a tremendous peptide for immune system health. I used it a lot during our COVID world type time, ongoing, but just to protect the immune system and to help. I think it's one of those peptides that your immune system's going to start declining as you age. You want to keep maintaining that because that's a big link to longevity. And so I think the thymosin alpha 1 should be utilized by most people. Thymosin beta 4 also has huge benefits in terms of healing and recovery.
Yeah.
And then your growth hormone secretagogues like the CJC, Ipamorelin, Tesamorelin, Ipamorelin, Secretropin, Sermorelin. Those are all, probably the kind of the next in line. What I do with my patients is I have this kind of protocol, longevity protocol, that I cycle the peptides through. I work on the mitochondria, I work on the immune system, I work on the musculoskeletal system. We sort of cycle that through. And that to me is, I always go by the theory, replace what you lose. Mm-hmm. You're losing, just like you're losing hormones, you're losing these peptides. A lot of these peptides are naturally made by the body.
Yeah.
UHK copper, BPC, thymic peptides, those are all naturally made by the body. They decline as we age. Let's give them back, right?
And I would encourage people to keep watching for new ones to come out because they constantly do.
Yeah, we're always looking for new stuff too. I mean, that's kind of fun thing about this field.
Yeah,
if you keep an eye on it, right? It's so changing so rapidly, and
it's almost kind of difficult to keep up.
It's really hard to keep up, right?
Yeah,
like I'm reading literally. People always ask, "Well, how do you keep up?" I go, "I read 2 hours a night. I just, Google Scholar sends me alerts for everything I'm interested in. I'm reading papers every night." And it's even hard to interpret research, right? It's like, because so much research is warped to somebody trying to have a secondary gain.
Yes.
So you have to even figure out what the right research to look at is. So it's a hard field to keep up on, and it's a hard field to know where to get your information from,
I know. I was going to tell you, I actually use the BPC TB500 gel, I really like it.
Topical, really.
Yes. And
you found that pretty useful just for like injuries?
Yes, I have, especially I'm dealing with some elbow shit here and some shoulder stuff, and it does help a lot. I'm a big MK2866 guy for faster healing, but you can't keep taking that. So I like the BPC-TB combo.
Yeah, which can be a drunkard, so yeah.
Yes, definitely. So that, and I agree, that's, so I talk to research site owners, and every one of them, their top seller now, it used to always be GW501, 516, and RAD140. Now it's, everybody says the same. It's BPC-157. Like
yeah,
every site. So
that's it. I still like Carterine a bit too. But
yeah, well, yeah, yeah, shit.
My own personal yeah.
That goes without saying. You know the cardio I do. It's right in my wheelhouse.
Right, exactly. I hate cardio, so it makes me actually okay with it.
I know that you've been so, it's just nice that you gave me all this time. You've been very generous with it, and I appreciate it.
I appreciate you, Dill. I really appreciate you doing what you're doing. And
thank you.
Inviting me on so we can spread this world. I'm so anxious for us to work together more.
Oh, yes. So. I hope just the tip of the iceberg, because I absolutely love you. I can't stress it enough. And you're such a breath of fresh air. I've told my wife about you so much, she's probably sick of hearing about it. I want to tell people real quick about your Human Optimization Academy, because I just signed up for it the other day. And as soon as I get home from my event this weekend, I'm going to dig in on there. If you want to just tell everybody about it real quick, because I think
what Dill and I were talking about is, how do you educate yourself? And we realized that that's hard, because you know, it's hard to figure out where to get that education. How do I learn how to look at my lab? So we actually put together a course. So if you go to BLI, which stands for Border Longevity Institute, BLI.academy, that takes you to our Human Optimization Academy. You can also go to borderlongevity.com, but BLI.academy. Human Optimization Academy has all these courses you can do. How do you read a CBC, a CMP, your hormones? How do you look at a lipid panel? What lipids do you need to know about, right? So it teaches you all that. And we have ongoing Q&A sessions that are really fun. We just did one a couple of days ago, and those are incredible. There's a lot of doctors in there too, you know, kind of progressive doctors and health advocates, and everybody asks very interesting questions. So if you guys sign up there, it's a good place to start and get some basic learning, so that you can then just go, okay, I'm just going to order these labs and I'll look at them myself. And then if I need help, I can reach out and I can find, you know, doctors. And then you can find us at BoulderLongevity.com. And, you know, we're certainly happy to help you go through labs and things like that as well. But please, please, please start educating yourself. Start learning this, and then educate your friends, because then we'll start spreading health medicine and not disease medicine, which is the only thing that's really ultimately going to change how long we live healthfully.
Yes. And make sure to follow Dr. Yurt's Instagram, because she puts up things that are really valuable. I learned something about menopause on there that was valuable to me. Just like these posts that come up, when they do come up, they're extremely valuable. I try to share them when they come up. Follow her on there. And
it's at Dr. Yurt.
Yes. Yes. And I'll link everything in the description. So once again, thank you so much for your time. It was so valuable to me and so many other people. So I really appreciate it.
Thanks, Dylan.
Thank you. All right, everybody. Stay tuned for plenty more to come. Dylan Jamelli and Dr. Yurt signing off.